is Eddie, and I was in a call.
Planet Earth about to be recycled. Your only chance to survive or evacuate is to leave with us.
Started as an effort by a charismatic preacher to build a new society, but it ended, of course, with the tragic deaths of more than 900 people.
Please, for God's sake, let's get on with it. We've lived as no other people have lived and loved. We've had as much of this world as you're going to get. Let's just be done with it. Let's be done with the agony of it. This is a revolutionary suicide. This is not a self-destructive suicide. So they're paying for this. They brought this upon us.
You're in a cult. I love you, and I want you out of it and with Christ.
But you're...
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Cultish, Entering the Kingdom of the Cults. My name is Jeremiah Roberts, and one of the co-hosts here. This is our first series of 2020. I'm here with Andrew, the super sleuth of the show. He is super sleuthing, but also recording with his little camera there, doing some additional B-roll content. How are you, man?
I'm doing well. What's up, everybody? Yeah, it's got that B-roll going on.
Yeah, so we are here, and we've got a great episode in store for you. And just to give you a heads up before we get started, a lot of you were very, very helpful. You, those of you who are part of the Cultish crew, you guys were very generous, and we're so grateful for those who gave your support, and we're going to have a lot of resources to go into next year. But just to give us, we're going to need continued support just to be able to produce more content with all the things we want to do. So if you want to be part of the Cultish crew and allow content like this to happen, go to thecultishshow.com, go to the donate tab. You can either donate one time or monthly, allow content like this, allow this program to continue. All that being said, we are here with Yvonne Wells. That's you say your last name, right? How are you?
Yes, I'm very good, thank you. How are you?
Good. So a couple weeks ago, we had an episode, and it was one of our last episodes of the year. We had Stephen Bancars on, and he attended church on Sunday, and I saw that you were talking to him.
Yes.
And then Pastor Luke came up to me and said, you've got to get her on Cultish. She has quite the story. And so we talked a little bit. And all that I know is that I just want to hear from you, be a fly on the wall here.
Okay.
And so you were in the New Age, and then you came in, then you went into Mormonism.
Yes.
Okay. So that's a super summary. So tell me about where it all began. Tell us about, just start from the very beginning.
I think the best place to start is actually at the meeting of my husband and I when we were 19 years old. And on our first date, we were going to school at North Texas State University in Denton, Texas. And on our first date, I told him that I didn't want to date younger guys. I'd had some bad experiences, so I wanted to make sure he was not younger than me.
Okay.
So I asked him how old he was, and he said 19. And I said, I am too. When is your birthday? And he said, August 16th. Mm-hmm. And I said, no, that's not possible. That's my birthday. So we pulled out our driver's licenses, and sure enough, we were born on the exact same day.
Huh.
And so that night, he called up his mother and found out that he was 3 hours older.
What?
So we were married 1 year later when we were 20.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
That's like, this is a sign. These are like the stars aligning.
So, literally.
Yeah.
That was, quite an event there to think that we could possibly be born on the same day, come together in the same location. There's a lot of other weird things there in that he was born on a base in Minot, North Dakota, Air Force Base, and I was born on a military base in Kittery, Maine. Hmm. So we're kind of on the same longitudinal line. And both of our families were military, Air Force, and we didn't have a hometown. We lived all over the country. And so we had very similar backgrounds. And also, both of us came from a background of where our parents raised us. There was a church, there was sort of like a social church in the background of it all, but we weren't really raised religiously. And so my husband and I were, we'd always sort of felt connected to God from the time we were a child, but we didn't have any real biblical understanding.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd never read the Bible, and we didn't really understand much. I did go to a Lutheran church for a few years when I was in high school. but I don't think I really understood what was going on. So it didn't really stick with me.
It was kind of like when you hear that you have the same birth date, not having that strong biblical upbringing. It's like the universe is telling you something.
Yes,
almost.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so I think that right away was setting me up for more of a mindset that I'm looking for answers and to understand this very strange event that brought us together. And,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And so through this whole thing, you got married at a very young age.
Yes.
And you're young, newlyweds, in love.
Yeah.
And where, like, what was the connection between young and just having us all this stuff? What was the, like, the point where, what was your first connection with something that was, you would say that was new age?
New age. Well, it's funny because it kind of happened right away. Even after we got married, it was not very long after that when I had some experiences with a Ouija board and my husband brought home. He actually, it seemed that I had a talent for navigating a Ouija board or making it move.
And just real quickly, for those of, there may be people in the audience who've heard about that in passing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, can you explain to the audience what exactly is that for those of them who don't know? Maybe they've seen a picture of it, but
The Ouija board?
Yeah, like, just explain what that
it's
is.
It's basically a board with letters on it and then a little pointer that you put your hands on and it supposedly moves and then gives you messages with the letters and numbers.
Right.
And it, on the surface, it seems like it's harmless. It's just a little toy. And so at the time, Ouija boards were kind of big back then anyways. And so my husband brought one home. And I'd had a little of experience using it in college that I felt kind of uncomfortable with it. Mm-hmm. But I did seem to have this gift where if I put my hands on a Ouija board, it started moving. And it was a little creepy, but I didn't really take it that seriously. So my husband thought we could win the Powerball if I gave him the numbers. So we started doing it that one summer. I think we were 21. Mm-hmm. And it started getting a little stranger. We started getting very cryptic, odd, but very strong messages. And then I think we were only doing it for like a couple of weeks when some sort of strange energy came out of the board and zapped me. I mean, it was like an electric shock.
What did you believe at that time in your life that you were contacting?
I didn't really know. I guess some sort of a spirit energy or something. I really wasn't aware of evil things out there.
Right.
So I was so naive that I didn't really think, you know, other than you see, you know, things on the movies or whatever, like The Exorcist or something like that. But I didn't really believe in that.
Right.
So I can only say that I thought probably I was contacting some sort of ghost or something.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but when that energy came out and just shocked me, it scared me so much. I never touched another Ouija board ever again. I've never touched one since.
Oh, wow.
And so we just put it away and kind of forgot about it. And then we went on our lives. And we spent the next decades chasing what was my false idol. Now I look back and see that clearly, but it was horses. So horses were my life. And,
yeah.
And so we spent the next couple decades chasing that. But ironically, it was horses that got me into the New Age.
Hmm.
Horses.
So, yes. So that sounds very strange, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It was. So I'd say that religion wasn't really, you know, even the New Age, it wasn't something I thought of a lot in my 20s, you know, maybe even part of my 30s. It wasn't until I got to my mid-30s that as I got involved in the horses, we became involved in a alternative horse care movement. And as that happened, I became exposed to a lot of alternative healthcare practitioners.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
And I think you know where that goes.
Yeah. Holistic medicine.
Yes, holistic medicine. And the horses brought me into the holistic medicine. And it was at first it was just for animals, but then it carried over into humans also.
Hmm.
And so I became friends with a gigantic network of what I now know to be New Age thinkers.
Hmm.
And I had simply had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know. And I slowly over time kept adopting their worldview. And I didn't realize, if you would have asked me at the time, I would still say I was Christian because having been, raised in a family of that time, everyone was Christian. You know, you just said you were Christian.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did go to church a couple of years when I was in high school. So that made me a Christian. And so I really didn't have any kind of biblical knowledge to be skeptical or worried or concerned about these other ways. I had no idea that Eastern philosophies were a religion.
Right.
I didn't understand that studying the chakras and the auras and the, mm-hmm. you know, the chi energy and right. the life force energy and the mm-hmm. all of these things were a different religion with an opposite worldview than Christianity.
Yeah, you just thought it was something that could be manipulated
yes.
and moved around.
Yes.
So that was my question too with the holistic medicine. Is that something you were practicing on horses? Or is that something that just got you interested in...
In a way, I slowly became more and more involved in that. I was never a holistic medical practitioner.
Oh, okay.
But I the way I dealt with everything started focusing more and more towards holistic. Like I would hire holistic practitioners, or I would go to seminars and learn from holistic practitioners.
Yeah.
And they would teach us a lot of different things, like with horses, where you're using your energy to try to, you know, heal horses.
Like Reiki or something like that?
Yeah, I did do a lot more Reiki later on. I actually became certified in Reiki.
Okay.
But initially, it was just called energy work.
Okay.
And so I did a lot of that, and I would use pendulums to get answers. And we did muscle testing, which is where you're asking your body for answers about whether a particular supplement is healthy for you or not.
Is that using the occiput drop or something like that is what it's called? That some chiropractic care practitioners use?
There's things like that too. Okay. Yeah, yeah. This is just simple where you just get yes or no answers, where you're using...
dowsing, essentially.
Yes, basically. Yeah. So over time, it became more and more... just part of every aspect of my life and every decision I was making and every friend that I had and everything that I was doing was wrapped up in this alternative way of thinking.
Right.
Which to me at the time was normal. And I did think that I was seeking answers. I was constantly looking for the next better thing. You're always trying to find the truth, the answers, and you're continually finding what you think is something,
right,
and then it takes you to the next level, and you got to look for the next thing.
Did it almost make you feel like a free thinker at that point,
yes,
too? Like that's the type of
right
beliefs that I have, is I'm open to almost everything. In
right,
a way.
Yeah. Right. Hmm. And then through that, so through the holistic animal healing, and then turning kind of into more of an alternative medicine for everything, that's when I began to adopt more of the thinkings of the secret, where you're manifesting your universe.
Yeah. Okay.
And God is in everything. And we can create the future. So everything, all of our thoughts had to be positive all the time. And because that's how you attract the law of attraction. So
right,
that's how you
right.
attract your future. Is you project positive energy and you concentrate on positive things that you want to happen. So if you want more money, you think about how you're attracting more money.
Manifest reality.
Yes, manifesting reality. So I got more and more involved in that.
Wow.
Thinking that that was normal, that was right, that was the correct path.
Right. Wow. It's very similar to Christian Science in a sense that they always wanted to do the same thing. Like they would deny this material reality, but what
yes.
they would always... talk about and really emphasizes the fact of having positive
yeah.
types of thoughts in order to, you know, have positive, you know, things happen. And if anyone has questions about Christian Science, you can look back in some of our episodes that we did there to get some more information on that.
Yeah. Yeah. Would you say that when, with all your involvement in the New Age, you know, it's one thing to kind of look at the different spiritual practices, but we all, in the same way how Walter Martin would always want to differentiate between, we're dealing with a theology. We're not, our battle is not against flesh and blood.
Right,
and so
right.
a lot of people who are in the New Age, they're very kind, compassionate,
oh yes,
wonderful people.
Yes.
And so, you know, when they're trying to do these practices and like along with you, trying to help these horses, you're trying what you can, you feel connected to that animal, you're trying to do these specific things. Tell me just a little bit, like, what was the community like with everything that you're involved in? Because that wasn't just you practicing. Usually it's almost in the same way how like CrossFit,
yeah,
like one of
yeah.
the appeals that CrossFit has is community, and some people would say CrossFit's a cult, and that's
yeah
like, yeah, like Babylon Bee and stuff like
CrossFit.
That yeah but Community is a big aspect of it, but with usually with New Age practitioners, it's not, you don't really practice it alone. There's usually a whole group and community.
And so I used to have a whole group of people that I would go to conferences with, and it was just the most loving, friendly, happy, positive group of people ever. I mean, it just lifted me up. And so that's why I kept doing that, because everything about it was positive.
Right.
And it just made me feel like, you know, I could do anything. So it's wonderful.
It's like
so much love and warmth and, you know, joy and happiness, everything positive you can think of.
When you have like a big group of people trying to manifest reality. And they're all having the same goals to them. Yes. I could see wanting to have, or thinking that there's more power in coming together and trying to manifest that into existence.
Right, right, right. So the whole thing was such a very positive experience. You would have no idea that you're going down the wrong path.
Yeah.
So, yeah, yeah. So,
what would be? So you're at a point where you know you talked about you had the what was like the shock of electricity after you went too far with the Ouija board. So you continued to progress.
Yeah.
And there was there a particular point where it kept on like progressing. So you said you're certified Reiki energy, like you started off helping all these horses.
Right, right.
And then you get into Reiki and then you're into yoga.
Yeah.
Like tell me just more about the progression, because at some point, you know, you talked about how you got into Mormonism.
Right.
But what was it like? Tell me just more about the progression, like leading up to like when you got there. That's what I'm kind of curious about, too. There's always, like I said, there's always this transcendent ascension.
Right.
When it
right.
comes to New Age thought. It's always about you're never like truly connected as much as you are always doing what you can to be connected to
losing touch of reality in a sense.
I think at first it did seem kind of like more innocent, where you're just kind of doing healing energy work. And then it got to where eventually I started doing more of a contacting spirits, and I started taking courses where we were developing our psychic connection and such. And so I was actually talking to spirits, and I could I found that I could automatic write. So I started channeling some writings that I called from angels.
Wow.
I thought that they came from, I have a couple of books of stuff I wrote.
Wow.
From angels.
Oh my goodness.
And not published books. I mean, right, just like notebooks.
I know what you mean.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're just holding, this practice, you're just holding this pen and like you're like writing, but you kind of know that you're not writing.
I could write. I would let it write. I would ask questions. I would ask a question and I would let it write the answer and it would write an answer to me.
Yeah.
And it was coming from something else, not me. It was coming from some other entity.
Wow. Can you give an example of something this entity would say? Like what would it say?
Oh my gosh, I'd have to look it up. It was very odd in the way it spoke. It was almost like it was such that the sayings coming from it were something that I would never say, or I would never say it in that way. It felt kind of foreign to me. So that's why I was really convinced it was something else. Wow. I have no idea.
Did you have like a spirit guide and have a name or anything like that?
I had a few different spirit guides and angels, and you know, some of them had names and some didn't. And I always thought that I was being guided and that I had 12 guardian angels standing guard over my property. And there are lots of things.
This may be a weird question, but I'm interested in right now. What did you think about extraterrestrial life at that point?
I believed that it was possibly out there. I wasn't really big onto the aliens being here right now, but I did not see the aliens as being any kind of demonic force.
Okay.
I thought that there were possibly actual extraterrestrials out there.
Okay, gotcha. Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, and even like with everything that you're talking about is that, and we talked a little bit when we were in the room getting you while we were waiting for the other show to be done, but a lot of times there are people, like even Christians, who will hear about these sort of things and they'll cross their arms and they'll kind of put on their skeptic face.
Right.
Because there's an immediate association with people who are con artists on television trying to do some sort of, you know, sleight of hand or trick, whether it's some sort of televangelist or some sort of like David Blaine thing or something like that.
Yeah.
And that's a whole nother story, but a lot of times there's a reality that what you are dealing with, mm-hmm. like that, those experiences are real.
Yeah.
And I think that's one thing when you're talking to someone who is either currently in the New Age or came out of the New Age, one or the other, is that you're dealing with a realm and things you're tapped into that the Bible actually defines. And that's one of the things that Walter Martin would do specifically. He would talk about the different dimensions.
Yeah.
And there are heavenly dimensions, but there's only one way to truly access the heavenly dimensions, and that is Christ.
Right.
And one of the things that Wally would say is that if crossing hell's dimensions, where occultic and New Age power comes from, he said if accessing hell's dimensions, if it took the Savior to be killed, if it took God to kill his own son on the cross, I'm paraphrasing it, to be able to close hell's dimensions, essentially, it should be avoided at every single cost.
Mm. Yes. I look back now and I'm kind of almost terrified of how close I was at times to crossing something really bad.
Wow.
And it just seems like I was always only brushing. Like, I did, even with the automatic writing, I think I did it for like a year or something, and then I quit doing it.
Wow.
So it's like I always would turn away. I'd do something and then I'd
something was
back
holding me
away.
Back.
Yes, yes.
Wow.
And but a lot of close brushes with very strange things. Like I did have a very, very incredible physical encounter with an entity once, and it took place over several nights in a hotel room.
Hmm.
Okay, at nighttime, and I can't even begin to explain what was going on exactly, but something was. In my mind, I envisioned it as some sort of a cat ghost, and it was actually jumping on my lap, waking me up repeatedly all night long for like the 3 nights that I was in that hotel room.
Wow, for 3 nights, okay.
Yes, and what was really strange is that my husband he wasn't there the first 2 nights, and he came for the last night of that, and I was on a trip. Happened to be in Sedona, Arizona.
Mm. And were you involved? Were you at some sort of New Age?
Yes, I was at like a New Age event. Yes. Mm. But this was a room by myself. Okay, I was in the room by myself for 2 nights when this was happening. And I did not tell my husband what had happened, okay? Because I didn't want to upset him or whatever. So the third night when he came into the room, before we went to sleep, he said, "Why did I just see a cat walk by?" And I had been envisioning these as cats jumping on my lap in the middle of the night. So that was very strange. Yeah. And that night, again, they were jumping on my lap again.
Wow.
And I left the hotel room and it never happened since, or, you know, even when I went back to that hotel, never again. Right. So
was there any like flip side to the New Age movement, like a dark side, to where there's so much focus on love and this power of positive thinking, but is there a way where how that makes you forget what's actually going on around you in reality?
It's almost like every now and then you get a glimpse of something dark, but then it's like something covers it up, like it's being covered. So you don't quite see it. And obviously there are people who, you know, argue and fight with each other, just the normal human stuff. So sometimes people will get upset with each other and such. And there'll be people who will do what they call like dark magic curses on each other and such. And in the group of the good magic practitioners, usually it's mostly you're just trying to cover everything up. But I think a big part of it comes from the fact that you never acknowledge bad things, because when you're trying to manifest and bring good into your life, you can't talk about the bad things.
Right.
So if there are bad things, you don't talk about it.
So almost like the law of attraction forces you to be in denial about the things that you see.
Yes.
It's like, no, we don't talk about that.
So if your life is going to crap, you can't talk about it, because that would be bringing more bad stuff into your life. But eventually your life will fall apart, whether you are manifesting that or not.
Right. As falling creatures, we're sinful.
Yes.
We're inherently bad at conception. So trying to fight that constantly with a love that's not even a biblical love, like you can only suppress it for so long. Like that's like kind of the question that I was getting at. Like, so for how long did that last in your life until you realized that things were changing?
Well, for me, life actually did crash. And I believe it was, I have to, you know, it's completely our fault. We made some bad decisions, bad choices. But I think I have to say that a lot of allowing that to happen was because of my New Age denial. I didn't want to acknowledge reality. I thought that I could create my future. I could manifest this perfect dream future that I had planned for us. And I was absolutely certain I could have it. I had no doubt whatsoever. And so as everything crumbled from bad decisions, I was not responding when I should have. It's like somebody lit the room on fire and I wasn't paying any attention.
Wow. You're not even trying to get water. You're actually just lighting more fires.
I'm busy seeing, oh, beautiful rainbows in the sky. Everything's wonderful.
Dang.
So basically we, long story short, but we fell behind on taxes to the point of where we had to sell our house on the other side of town and to pay the taxes. And then we moved to this side of town and found a rental property over here. And that's how we ended up in Queen Creek, and that's how we ended up in the situation that really changed our life. And that's when my husband had a near-death car accident. And we had just moved over here. It was October of 2014. And he was driving on the highway north of town. His car slipped on a little spot of water. Luckily, no other cars were around, but it flipped him up in the air. He landed upside down in a ravine, not just a ditch. It was a giant ravine.
Wow. Mm.
And the police say that when they got there, he was walking around. Yeah, they said he should have been killed.
What?
His car was upside down, totaled.
Yeah.
And he was walking around mumbling about how he had to get his tools because he had to work the next day.
What in the world?
That's what the police told me.
Hmm.
And then he was completely fine. He had like a little scratch on his head. He was fine. They don't even know how he got out of the car.
What?
So, yeah. And so it was very traumatic because we knew that God had saved his life. There was no explanation for that. It was a miracle. Now, we should have been overjoyed, but instead, we were just so freaked out because everything just seemed, our life had just turned upside down.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all my plans were mushed and crashed, and my husband was almost killed, but he's alive, and we didn't know what to do with ourselves. So that day, I filled out a form. I was searching for Jesus Christ, I think, at that moment. My heart was searching for Jesus Christ. So I went to the Church of Jesus Christ website. That makes sense. And I filled out a little contact form.
Right. Well, at that time, they're called the Church of Jesus Christ now.
Yeah.
But back then, it would have been Mormon.
It was Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Okay.
Yeah, it was Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Yeah, there's a while where it's funny because they had a campaign not too long ago where it was like, I am a Mormon. Like, they're really proud about it.
Yeah.
And now
they're
trying to differentiate themselves from this. Let me ask you this. So, I mean, you're having this moment where all of a sudden you're saying, okay, well, maybe this is something that is like an act of God.
Right. Yes.
But then, so every single religion, They all want Jesus on their team. Mm-hmm. They always have to, you can't ignore Jesus. You have to do something with him.
Right.
And so grew up with all your upbringing, all the things that you were involved in. What was your thought or perception of who Jesus was? Did you just see him as like certain New Age people see him as like an ascended master?
Or I someone saw him that just as kind of, a wonderful human being, like the perfect human being.
The best teacher.
Yes. This great, fantastic teacher. This great, the greatest person who ever lived.
Okay.
But I did not see him as God, or even really the Son of God, because I didn't understand what that was.
Right.
But there's still at least a level of reverence in which you acknowledged him.
A level of reverence. Yes, that would be correct. That would be correct. And that's why Mormonism seemed to make so much sense to me at that point. So,
okay.
Yeah.
It makes sense too, like going from a New Age experience off of like experiences and emotions, and then your husband having like a near-death experience. Mm-hmm. So it makes you go, well, all of a sudden your mind is going, having this emotion, well, now I need to search Jesus. So you do Church of Jesus Christ. The Mormon church pops up, but you're not even thinking about that because you're going purely off emotion and experience, which is guiding your decision making. And that's what they capital on. That's what they bank on is this burning in the bosom.
Yeah.
Keep going. I'm interested in that.
So they showed up the next day at our, I'm like, wow, that was fast.
Got to give it to him.
Of course. And just, you know, just lovely, lovely people, delightful. Two missionaries showed up and they were just so wonderful and they were so beautiful. And it's like they were shining human beings there, you know, at our door. And wow. It just, they gave us so much hope and they made us feel so loved.
Yeah.
And then they began their series of visits and they brought others with them to talk to us. And they just seemed like such wonderful people. And what they were telling us made complete sense to me based on my New Age thinking.
Right.
It completely corresponded with everything that I believed.
We have a pending series coming up. We've already recorded it. We're going to be releasing it sometime in the near future where we went over the missionary lessons. Dan Tate, he goes to, he's a member of Apologia, but he's also a former Mormon. He actually just sent me, I showed you the plaque that he got when he was a missionary in Florida.
Yes, yes.
So we have an upcoming series, just so you all know, where we're going to be going through all the different missionary lessons, like lesson by lesson.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
So they walked you through those lessons. I'm assuming in between them, they're kind of starting, hinting at the fact that baptism.
Yeah, because
baptism comes up a lot.
Mm-hmm. Baptism?
Yes. Yeah. Like being baptized in the church, you know, figure out a time to schedule your baptism. Just think about it, you know, and then as the lessons progress.
Right.
What would you say that, because the lessons start off with a lot of Christian lingo and a lot of Christian language, but you have the mindset of someone who's New Age.
I'm not even really a Christian at that point.
Yeah. Oh,
like,
yeah,
I am so biblically illiterate that I have no idea.
Right.
And I tell you, they had me at the pre-existence.
Okay.
That did it for me.
Yeah,
because of
so
my
similar.
Birth. That's it. Our birthday, our shared birthday.
Yeah.
That explained it.
Ah.
Pre-existence, explain that.
Yeah, because pre-existence, in a sense, it's all... This, it's almost in another way like reincarnation.
Yes, yes.
Which
we all exist before we came to Earth. We existed with Heavenly Father.
Yeah.
And so it's a little unclear about how it worked, but certainly they told me you could have picked to come and be born on the same day. Of course.
Yeah.
So this completely fits in with their theology, and to me, it explained our shared birth.
Wow.
And so, and then everything else they presented made complete sense. They talk about the eternal progression, that we're all on this grand journey to become better and better, and eventually we become gods.
Yeah.
And that made complete sense.
Yeah, and there'll be a lot of times there's language initially that they say it without saying it.
So right.
They'll talk about families are forever.
Yes, yes.
What's the other thing? We need to return. We might be able to one day, if we follow the commandments, I'm paraphrasing it, to return to our Heavenly Father.
Yeah, yeah.
But eventually those definitions becomes becoming a God one day.
Right.
Wouldn't a loving Heavenly Father want you to be just like him?
Yes.
They don't start out stating it exactly like
right.
that. You're correct. But even if they had stated it exactly like that to me, I would have been, yay. That would have been great.
Yes.
So, yeah. Yeah.
So tell me more about these lessons. So you pre-existence, becoming a God one day, you identified that. Just tell me more about the lessons or the experiences with the missionaries.
You know, I don't remember in detail exactly what we went over. Everything just seemed like completely fine to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I look back now, I know that what they were teaching was really quite different from Christianity. But at the time, it was so... it just seems so acceptable to me, or believable.
Mm-hmm.
I had no trouble with that, you know? Mm. And even though they talked about having all these other scriptures, based on my own experience having, you know, a bit of supernatural stuff happen in my life, it seemed completely conceivable to me that Joseph Smith had a vision and that God came and visited him.
Right.
I could completely accept that, and that he had all these supernatural events and that he became a prophet and that God could tell him, you know, special things.
So I have a question. So you, when you're in the New Age, you dealt with crystals?
Yes.
I'm assuming because you're in Sedona, so
right,
it's crystal
right.
shops everywhere.
Yeah.
But
so having a special stone.
Yeah, with the Urim and Thummim and having a stone looking into a hat.
Yeah.
That was appealing.
That
was
would be completely, completely fine. Completely normal.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
It does not surprise me. So then, you know, they're talking about getting baptism. And you've had a lot of experience with the spiritual realm, given all of your involvement in the New Age.
Yeah.
And like I said, those experiences are real. You have, then they're talking about praying about the Book of Mormon.
Right.
And they take you to the passage at the very end of the Book of Mormon talking about whether or not you'll pray it in to see if the Holy Spirit will testify that these things are true.
Right, right.
So was there a point that you and your husband prayed about the Book of Mormon? And given that you're in the New Age, did you experience anything? Was that kind of part of the process?
I think we kind of did, but it's like easy to just kind of want to have a happy feeling and have it. I think that's what I did. I just willed myself to have a happy feeling, and that was good enough, you know?
Yeah, so.
And
it's like all of these random coincidences in your life seem to start making sense, you know, where it's like you guys have the same birth date.
Yeah.
All of a sudden your life's kind of spiraling downhill, but there's a near-death experience. Then you search it on the computer, full of emotion.
Yeah.
The Mormons pop up. They show at your door, and they're banking on that in a sense, you know? And it makes sense.
It was all lining up perfectly.
Yeah, you almost didn't even need to pray about it because you're like, this is already going exactly the way I want it to go.
And what they offered to us, that community, that family, this loving group of people, at that point in our life, we were just starving for that.
Mm. Yeah.
And there was there's no way we could turn that down. It was irresistible to us. What they were offering us, we could not turn away from. Mm-hmm. We needed that so badly at that point because we were feeling so lost and alone. And they helped us so much to suddenly feel okay again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, because you had so it was mainly because you moved and you had the accident.
Yes, yes.
And those two things. And so whatever, so that it was just the previous community that you were kind of disconnected because you had to move.
Right.
I've moved a lot of times in my life. So
yes,
I know that's
It kind of throws everything.
And I'll be honest, I have to admire them for that's an aspect that they do very, very well. Mm-hmm. Like I went to a school here in Mesa, Arizona that was 98% Mormon. And like they do life very, very well. They do everything together. Like everyone knows everyone.
Yeah.
And it's interesting, on a total side note, a lot of them are fourth or fifth generation Mormons. Mm-hmm. And just coincidentally, a lot of them end up being like fourth or fifth cousins as well,
right,
too.
Right,
interesting.
Right.
Do the math there. Yeah. But anyways, you know, but they're sweet, wonderful people. And you're always being part of that. So. Mm-hmm. You're into all that, and so you just say, yes, let's go.
Let's go.
Do it.
let's
be baptized. We're now part of something. Mm-hmm. You know, the stars have aligned. We're on the same birth date. Now you really just connect to the pre-existence.
Yep.
But you were already married.
Yeah. So we were baptized in the end of December 2014.
Okay.
So it was just a couple months after. It was like a very fast series of lessons and then we were just baptized right away.
I guess the question I have is that with growing up where I had a lot of friends who were Mormon and typically the process of a marriage is that you have usually the man who will go on a mission and right when he gets back he'll get married and a lot of times it'll be the case, at least I saw it, where they'll the guy will have a sweetheart that's waiting back for him at home and it's waiting for those 2 years and doing all that, and they go get sealed in the temple very, very young, just because that's the whole aspect, is that you want to be mirrored for all time and all eternity, all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But you're already married.
Yes.
But marriage is a distinct part of Mormon theology.
Right.
Being married
very
for all time
important.
And eternity. So I guess my question would be, in the same way that they're started pushing you to get baptized.
They're pushing us
into the church.
Endowed in the temple, to go through the temple and get our endowment in the temple and then get sealed in the temple.
Was that right away after you
got
baptized?
No, you have to wait a year.
Okay.
Yeah, so they require you to wait a year after you get baptized in order to go through the temple endowment.
Okay.
So so it was December 2014 that we were baptized. So and then we waited a whole year, and actually it was in January of 2016.
Okay.
So it was 1 year and a couple of weeks.
Okay.
January of 2016 when we got our temple recommend, and then we went through the temple endowment. It was like I wrote it down. It was January 22nd, 2016 is when we went through the temple for the first time, and we were 50. We had just turned 50, so we were 50 years old.
Wow.
So when we went through the temple. And then 1 week later, we went back and did the marriage sealing ceremony in the temple.
So if you don't mind me asking, a lot of people, their turning point where all of a sudden they are really like, wow, okay, what exactly is this?
Yeah.
When you were in the temple and doing all this, did it were moments it felt odd or maybe kind of cultish, or just given your background, did you kind of just sort of feel at home? This is just sort of, maybe this is a little extra, but I've done stuff similar.
We've been kind of working up to it all that year, waiting for it to come, and everyone makes it so exciting, you know?
Yeah.
And so it did seem kind of exciting that day. And we kind of went through the whole thing, and it was kind of strange and odd and bizarre. But, you know, everyone's so excited, and, you know, it's like, okay, you know, interesting. But, you know, I didn't really think too much about it. And, of course, I'm still completely immersed in my New Age thoughts.
Right.
And, you know, we went back to the marriage sealing ceremony, which is actually very beautiful, absolutely lovely, very lovely. So we only went back to the temple one more time. So it was like 2 months later in March of 2016. One time we went to the temple by ourselves, you know, just to go. And I did not like it at all. I just had the strangest feelings. I was getting a real severe pushback. And I actually felt kind of almost sick while I was there I don't know why, for just the strangest reason. I did not feel well, and everything seemed kind of strange, and I did not like it. I felt very uncomfortable, and I never wanted to go again. So we never went back again.
Being a very experiential person with your feelings and emotions at that time, being very in tune to them, what did that make you question the church at
it
all?
It did. Okay. That's when I actually began to have some doubts about the church. It was probably after that. And it's funny because shortly after that is when I began having some health problems that went on for about 3 years, completely resolved now. But I started having health issues just a couple months after that. And so I started to have some doubts about the church. But between that and the health problems, I actually turned back to the New Age. Worse. It was going further.
Isn't it a lot of times because of the fact that, like, in New Age, they have the idea of aligning your chakras and also having a lot of the chakra alignment, a lot of the products you look at, like, natural grocers or different, like, health food stores, like, a lot of it, like, a lot of those cleansing products and those sort of diets that you do, it's kind of interfused with a lot of New Age thought.
Yes.
Cleaning the gut.
Right. Yes. So cleaning the gut. So you would, a lot of times, I think people who are New Age, like, they see the way they see the body, like this dualism, that if you're not doing something that's, if you're unhealthy, like, there's obviously a physical aspect where you can holistically treat it.
Yeah.
But they have a view a lot of times, and you could compliment in this list that I've seen, where that particularly has to do with something that is wrong with me or wrong with my spirituality or something that I need to be able to fix from a Eastern spiritual standpoint in order to fix how I'm doing.
Right,
would that be correct?
Yeah. Well, actually, as I started having health problems, I actually turned back to New Age more, and what I was exploring into more New Age. And that's when I became certified in Reiki, was after that. That wasn't until January 2017 that I went to the Reiki certification course, where it's basically like a 2-day process. I got certified in Reiki level 1 and 2. And
while you're part of the LDS Church.
Yes. But I have to say, there, you know, even though, maybe technically they don't want you like participating in other religions or such, but everyone was doing alternative stuff there. I mean, they have all these, they do all kinds of essential oils, and they have these courses where you do special work with feet and everything. I can't remember what it's called, but they have everything they did. There was a lot of New Age stuff going on the side.
Yeah.
Even, you know, with little events that they've had and such, they were very open to alternative, especially alternative health stuff. That just was not a problem at all. So it wasn't really an issue,
Okay. So I guess another question that I would have is that you're having these health issues, and how did that, where did it progress from there?
Because
it seems like they're always like, it's there. A lot of times people bounce around from one particular practice to another, because it's just a whole, I mean, the whole broad spectrum. Okay. We did our issue when we were talking with Stephen. Uh-huh. We did a very, very broad overview. We talked about the history, right. And we talked about lucid dreaming, mm-hmm. astral projection, tarot cards. Mm-hmm. There's so many different avenues, but a lot of times people will kind of jump around.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, you're certified in Reiki.
So yeah. So after that, so yeah. Then in January 2017, I became certified in the Reiki. So I started practicing that every day, and I actually was deciding that I was going to become a Reiki practitioner. So I was planning to go to the full course, mm-hmm. and then actually open up some sort of an animal Reiki business. Mm-hmm. So that was my plans at the time.
So my question would be real quickly. You're fine. I always want to like define terms for our audience. I want to always assume that in case anyone doesn't know, we plan on doing an episode in the future specifically on Reiki.
On Reiki, okay.
But if you could just for anyone who doesn't know, because it's one of those terms that people will hear, but they don't really understand what it actually is. So you can either give like a summary of what that is for anyone who doesn't know.
Okay, it's basically an energy healing that comes through you. It was invented by a man in Japan. I can't remember his name, but it's a Japanese man. And he supposedly was the first one. So there's something about how he climbed to the top of a mountain and then this Reiki energy got installed into him from some spirit being, okay? Hmm. So that starts off kind of badly, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So, anyways, the way it goes is that once you have this Reiki in you, you can then pass it on to other people. And so you have to go to someone else who's had the Reiki installed in them so that they can install this in you.
A guru or something.
Yeah, yeah. And they do it in a ceremony that takes place. And it's a little scary now because when I think about it, I think that they're installing a demon in you. So
well, you know what's interesting about
I'm
that?
I'm not sure, but yeah,
we can even correlate that to the LDS Church. Uh-huh. They do the same thing. They have you pray about something,
right?
Accept that Holy Ghost, mm-hmm. and then get baptized for it,
right?
So they're
right.
essentially still doing the same exact things.
Yes.
It's a different Holy Spirit than that of Scripture.
Installing something in you, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Keep going.
So I obviously, you know, you have to open yourself up to this, and it's a very interesting. I wrote a whole little thing. They had us write down as we were going through it. We write our dreams down and everything, and you have like a vision while you're there. And everything, it's kind of weird. I have to go back and read through the whole thing again now. But it's a very interesting thing. And once you have this healing, this Reiki healing energy in you, it then emanates out of your hands. And sometimes your hands will even feel hot and people can feel the heat from your hands.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You can turn the Reiki on and have this healing energy go into the person that you want to heal. Mm-hmm. So it's like a channeled healing energy that
right.
you can use on another person or yourself or an animal. So I was practicing that on animals and myself and my husband and, you know, et cetera.
And so there would be times, though, say you're using Reiki healing on a specific person who has a legitimate physical ailment. Mm-hmm. And there would be times where they would experience recovery or actual healing.
It works.
Right. And
it
so
works.
I think that's important people realize too. So in the same way how we talked about you're going into dimensions you shouldn't do, and what we're going to probably try and wrap things up here because we're in about 5 minutes or so just because we've been going for a little while here. But like Walter Martin, he talks about the fact in Kingdom of the Occult, like he talks about how the different dimensions, if I can find it here. Oh, yeah, this is from the very introduction where he talks about the Christian worldview, like understanding what's going on here. So he says in Kingdom of the Occult, he says, the Bible is a dimensional book in the sense that a dimension is a realm of reality, sometimes not imperceivable, but nonetheless genuine. Human beings live in a dimension subject to the five senses, and they tend to make the mistake of believing that anything beyond the realm of those senses simply is not there.
Mm-hmm.
To accept such reasoning would be a fatal mistake from a biblical perspective, even as people live in the dimension of earth. So the Bible says there is another dimension of heaven where God reigns as sovereign. The second dimension of heaven, or the throne of God himself, is the more real than the human sense can perceive. It is a dimension that was bridged when God chose to become man in the flesh. So
wow.
he describes it from a biblical point of view. So the reality is that the Bible talks mm-hmm. about these specific dimensions, mm-hmm. and there's a reality to that. In the same way, there is real, well, the real legitimate experiences mm-hmm. you have, there's real and legitimate healing
yes.
that yes. comes from these practices. In fact, one of his lectures Waltemar did on psychic phenomena, and he says, yes, there is healing that comes from these practices, but it's not healing that comes from God.
Right.
So just because someone experiences, right. so that's an aspect where you don't want to appeal to signs and wonders, the miraculous,
yeah. mm.
because Satan has the ability uh-huh. to emulate that. You want to look at what does the Bible say about this specifically.
And Bible verse, just to go along with that, if anyone's listening going, what? Yeah. Bible verse right here, test of a prophet, Deuteronomy 13:1. If a prophet or a dreamer of dreams arises among you and gives you a sign or wonder, here it is, and the sign or wonder that he tells you comes to pass, which means that it happens, mm-hmm. if the miracle happens in front of your eyes. And if he says, let us go after other gods which you have not known, and let us serve them, you shall not listen to the words of that prophet or that dreamer of dreams. So the second half there is, well, even if there is a sign or a wonder, a miracle, it comes to pass, so it looks legit, but if they lead you after other gods, that's the lamp unto our feet, the guiding of our path, saying, well, I'm not going to actually listen to them or fear them. But the precedent there is exactly what Jerry is saying, that there's these things that actually do happen, and there's our biblical precedent right there.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly. So all that being said, we'll wrap up in part one, because I feel like this is going in a very interesting direction.
So good.
And as I always say, I'm super excited to find out what's going on. We are kicking off 2020 with a bang, are we not?
Boom!
Boom! So... all that being said, thank you guys for listening. As always, we need your support to continue programs like these. Go to thecultistshow.com. Go to the donate tab. You can either donate one time or monthly. We need your support and be part of the cultist crew so we can just produce more content for 2020 with all the things we want to do for you, for all of you. So thank you for listening. Please share our content. Like, review this episode, share it on iTunes, share it on your social media, whether it's on the Instagram, Facebook, or whatever else is out there, on the TikTok, if you can share that episode there. I don't know how that's done. Whatever, all this new stuff.
TikTok.
Whatever it's called. But all that being said, we will talk to you guys next time on Cultist. We're entering into the kingdom of the cults. We'll talk to you guys in part two.